need somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone. Help!
Hello everyone, welcome. Thanks for joining us tonight. On another award-winning episode of Real Recovery, it is now underway. We're so glad you're with us tonight. Happy Sunday. It's Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, across the way, George P. Fraser. And, of course, on the board tonight is Elena. Thank you for being with us tonight, Elena.
Yeah, thanks for having me tonight.
What a move up there, Bill. Goodbye, Alex. The career's over, don't you think?
No, not at all.
Well, we're checking to see if he's listening.
George, I want to start off with a little passage from 1 Corinthians 15:58. It says, the Apostle Paul says, be steadfast, immovable, always excelling in the Lord's work, knowing that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. And our guest tonight is doing just that. She's using her recovery to share her hope and faith to others. Her name is Jennifer Loop, and we're going to bring her on the show in just a little bit.
That sounds great. And that's what we're called to do. He doesn't save us from our sinful addictions or whatever the issue is if he doesn't have a job for us. And when you get this, he wants you to share the love and transforming power that he did in your life with other people.
He did that on the cross, George, Georgie boy. And,
yep.
And we want you to resolve your unresolved issues, and you do that through the power of Christ in your life.
You do that, Bill, and you need to pick up your cross and deny yourself daily. We all have some unresolved discontent, and you can harbor those in your mind, you continue to battle them, or you can lay them at the foot of the cross and say, hey, I need some help here. What would you have me do? And that's when the recovery starts.
I agree. The problem in recovery, George, and you can attest to this, is that you can rehearse over and over bad patterns, and you need new patterns. You need to have, because practice makes permanent, wouldn't you guess?
Well, we need to take off the old self and put on the new self.
Right,
and
right.
The other problem in recovery, at least in mine, is I'm in it.
True.
You know?
Now, for example, George, if you practice a bad golf swing, you'll have a better bad golf swing.
You didn't have to get personal.
Well, I did get personal because I saw you swinging that thing, and it was, like, sad.
Kind of sad. It's pathetic.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's we have to groove new patterns. We have to make new habits.
Groove, huh?
Yeah, groove.
Let's go back to the 70s here.
Groovy, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. Well, George, let's talk about a step tonight. Let's get Jennifer on the show.
Okay, well, we're on step one where we admit we're powerless over alcohol and drugs and our lives are unmanageable. But the fact is we are powerless over everything. My next breath comes at the mercy of an all-sovereign God. Nothing happens without God allowing it to happen. We don't need to understand it. In fact, Bill, I don't have to understand God for him to exist. And I think that's where a lot of us get stuck. My God is not God. God is God. He can be my God, but he's existent on his own, not out of my creation.
Okay, I have no idea what you just said.
Well, what I said is very important for people in recovery, because the reason we sin is we decide to do our will instead of God's will. And God is the only uncreated being. He's God.
Right.
And we get that mixed up that we kind of put God after our own creation rather than us being created. And the reason we get into recovery is we are our own God. Addiction is idolatry, and we're choosing to make the decisions that only he can make.
Mm-hmm.
Hope I dumbed that down enough for you.
It helped a little bit.
Okay.
I think the first time you said it, it was very confusing, and
could
partly because I only pay half attention when you talk. So
well,
that was a deadly combo.
A lot of people can't read their phone and listen at the same time, but you're a gifted guy.
I am gifted.
You are gifted.
I've got a little few notes on my phone, and I'm using them, George.
But step one, we see that with guys we work with.
Step one, yeah.
Right by you.
No, it didn't go by me. It did not go by me.
An ADD moment from Bill Arnold.
That is not true. That is not true. Wow, look at that blue car that just drove by.
Yeah. So it starts with one, doesn't it?
Everything starts at one. It's the realization that you're completely broken and you're a sinner and you're in trouble.
And part of the problem that we have is we come in and we think, gosh, if I can stop drinking, everything will be okay. And then you realize after you stop the behavior, it's not the behavior, it's a heart condition. It's something wrong with us. I'm the problem.
Mm-hmm.
My drinking is but a symptom, or the drug use is a symptom of the problem.
Okay. Anything more on step one, George, or should we move?
I think we roll here.
We roll here. Let's bring on our guest then. Jennifer Loop is the training coach and small group leader for Celebrate Recovery, which is a great program at her church. It's called Elmbrook Church in Wisconsin. Her passion is to teach and preach the word to encourage others with the hope and healing found in Jesus Christ. Married to husband Gary for 15 years, her biggest accomplishments include admitting she doesn't have all the answers, along with surviving, forgiving, and recovering.
That's nice.
That's really nice. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Isn't that nice, George? She's still on the line.
Yeah, that is
we
nice.
We always fear that when we bring on the guests, they're gone.
Well, you can't blame her.
No, but I'm starting to relax all of a sudden because she's here. Now, Jennifer, you live in Wisconsin. Is that correct?
Yes, I've lived here for 20 years, but I was born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh, la-di-da.
I've been in the Midwest long enough to get the accent.
Okay, good. So we know you got a great story, and we want to get right into it. So if you would, start to tell our listeners a little bit about how things got started for you and at what age, and when did you start to dabble in chemicals?
Things got started for me pretty young. As a kid, first of all, I like to start off by saying the things that I did have before the things I didn't have. And I had a lot of things some kids didn't. I mean, I never went hungry. I always had a roof over my head. I had people who loved me. Dad's child support checks arrived on time, and I went to school. And recovery in the program taught me to be able to see that I did have some things that other kids didn't have. But growing up in the Bay Area in California, I was pretty much raised by a single mom, and we moved around a lot, and I went to a different school every year until sixth grade, and so I was out the new kid, and I never felt like I really fit in. And part of that moving around a lot, I was with various caregivers, and so early on, I never felt safe or secure. I was exposed to adults who abused alcohol. There was violence in the home. There was physical abuse. For me, there was sexual abuse. And so just as a kid, I was scared. Just feeling scared. I also grew up feeling not like I just didn't fit in, like there was something wrong with me. And so my solution was be good, perform, make people like me, be accepted and loved, to be accepted and loved. And the other thing that I did, you asked when I started abusing substances about 9. And the first thing that I ever took was an over-the-counter diet pill because I thought if I could just fix the outside, then the inside would be okay.
But you're 9 years old.
9 years old, yeah. And, you know, sexual abuse is pretty boundary-busting, and it also, you know, it's just a mess. And so I kept trying to fix the outsides, and I didn't have words like shame. But that's really what I was struggling with. Well, and out of that, after that, I became an angry teenager, mad, resentful, bitter. And I wanted to be tough because I didn't want to be scared anymore. I was sick of being the scared little girl. I was sick of being the new kid and picked on. And so I kind of developed that tough veneer, which was really a facade. And so I started methamphetamines at 15, and I moved into cocaine at 16. And those substances made me feel strong, like I didn't need to feel so scared anymore.
Jennifer, what kind of friends were you hanging out with? Did you have what would be considered like normal kind of friends? Because if you're starting to hang out with people that's doing cocaine at 16, I'm guessing you're off the path a little.
I was off the path a lot, and, you know, I've listened to some of the interviews from your other guests, and, you know, my story is so similar. I mean, most of our – what we learn in recovery is that we're not so unique. I'm not so chronically unique, and I had so much in common with a lot of people in recovery in that I had a double life. And so I didn't have very many friends. By the time I was a teenager, living with men twice my age and using drugs, but – what God did is he put a Christian friend. I didn't have very many friends, but he put a Christian friend into my life in middle school, which is right around the time when the abuse started happening to me.
How old were you when this happened? Middle school, I'm going to say, what, 8th, 9th grade, 7th grade?
Yeah, the sexual abuse started when I was 9, and it stopped when I was 12.
This is heartbreaking.
And, yeah.
Yeah, you know, when you say that you were kind of an angry teenager, right? I'm angry hearing it, and so that would be pretty natural, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean you're angry hearing it?
When I hear about somebody that this happens to, I get angry.
Okay, gotcha.
So if it's happening to you, why wouldn't you be angry?
Totally.
Fair?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So, Jennifer, you are now battling with a lot of anger, and you are finding yourself in situations with boys / men. Double your age? A little bit? How much older than you? 10 years?
Twice my age. So they wouldn't have been boys. They would have been men. But still going to school and still sort of trying to pretend, you know, it really was that double life. I was a different person, different situations. That's a pretty common thing, too, you know, being a chameleon. Blending in and changing my personality so that I could just fit in with, you know, whoever I was. So it was a different person, different situations.
All right. We got a lot of story to cover tonight, George. And this is loaded with all kinds of details. We're going to get to them more after we take a little short break. And Jennifer Loop is our guest tonight. You're listening to Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery, Bill and George. We have Elena on the board tonight. So glad you're with us tonight. We're talking to Jennifer Loop, and she's given us her story. And it starts at a pretty young age with some very disturbing news of abuse. And now we're working our way up into, high school now? And we're using cocaine. And,
exactly.
And I promise you things are not getting better.
You're right. And sometimes people say, well, what is it going to take? And sometimes it's more, you know, I mean, everybody has a different rock bottom. What God did though for me is he put a Christian friend into my life who, invited me to church and, you know, shared the hope of Jesus with me, which I just rejected. I mean, it didn't make sense to me. I didn't get it, but she was my friend anyway. For years, for probably 5 or 6 years, where, you know, she'd invite me to church and I'd say no or lie and make up some excuse. But the Spirit just works in such mysterious ways because one day she asked me, I think we were probably sophomores, to go to a conference at the Oakland Coliseum, a Christian conference. And I remember sitting there listening to all this stuff and, you know, I just felt something come over me and I just prayed. I prayed to accept Jesus, and the funny thing is, you know, I went home and I prayed the prayer 3 more times because I wanted to make sure it stuck.
That's so cute.
to make sure I got it right.
Yeah, so the faithfulness of a friend who invited you to a conference gave you the opportunity to hear the gospel truth and receive Christ.
It did, and what happened after that is I guess I felt like I met Jesus at that time, but I was still pretty angry. I was still confused. I was lost. And I would love to tell you, oh, and then I started going to church with her and worshiping with her every week. And then, you know, my life turned around, but, you know, I had that experience and then I sort of went back to what I was doing and it got worse. And I continued a double life. I continued doing drugs. I continued living with guys and all the while not telling her any of this. And then I'm one of those people who switch addictions. Some people sort of stay stuck on one thing, but, you know, I can quit one thing and just pick up another thing the next day. And so probably by the time I was 20, we were still very good friends, but I had stopped the drugs but had picked up abusing food and body image and exercise, and I had developed a pretty serious anorexic eating disorder.
Bill, that makes sense in that we want to be like somebody who's a Christian. A lot of us in recovery, when we start out, we know that Christ is the answer, and maybe we have some straight friends that can't ever meet our party friends, and that's our hope, but we just can't do it. It just doesn't seem to be able to do it. It's not our ideal thing. We want to do it, but we can't. And was this part of your story? You wanted to keep a foot in the sane world with the Christians, but you just weren't able to do it?
That's exactly right. And you know, I think I was too scared. I mean, you were right when you were saying addictions and those things are idolatry because I thought it was too scary for me to leave that, to give that up. And what would life be like if I gave that all up?
Oh, totally. You know, what we're doing for fun then is having pie after church or whatever. And gosh, I'd like to be like those guys who want to be missionaries in Africa, but, you know, I still got some partying left, and it's scary. It's overwhelming, but you want to hold on to that because you know deep down that what you're doing isn't long term. It's not going to work, but you just can't do it. It's powerlessness, and that's step one for us, Bill.
Well, George, I'm just starting to hear this story in a way that I got to say I've heard this before, where you have a little moment of enlightenment where you make a decision and the Holy Spirit comes into your life, but then the seed is there, but there's nothing growing. There's something that the enemy is going to come in and say, you didn't really mean that. That was a mistake, or that's not going to stick. And you start hearing other voices and ones that are not healthy.
True. And we go to the book of James where it talks about a double-minded man is unstable than all that he does, tossed about like waves on the ocean. It for a lot of us is, who am I? It depends on who I'm with.
Right. And Jennifer, I'm guessing that you had some serious self-esteem issues, and you had some serious body image issues and all of that going on. And you still needed the attention of men, and you still wanted to feel all kinds of stuff that you were feeling before, and you weren't really ready to let that go, were you?
That's exactly right. And I think one of the most, it's so right, because one of the things that I've really learned in recovery watching other people is that no one can make anybody else get ready. I mean, the only person who can make somebody get ready is God, and he doesn't force himself upon us, you know. And for me, it was, again, just sort of a mysterious thing. I can't explain it in any other way than it's just God's supernatural timing, because by the time I was 20 or 21, I really, one day out of the blue, sort of similar to how I had agreed 5 years previously to go to a conference with my friend, I just said to her, do you think I could go to that church with you? You know, I was sick of the way that I was living, but it really was Spirit-led. And I went, and 4 or 5, 6 months later, I was baptized. And that was sort of the next step, but I wasn't fully ready, and I still was, you know, abusing food, or abusing it by not eating it and over-exercising and all of those things. So again, even after that experience, there was still more to my recovery journey.
There's a process here, Bill. We start with the Holy Spirit quickening our heart. And it's a process, and we yield little by little. All we need to do to prove that point is look at the church and the strong Christian people that struggle with obesity, but that's never really talked about, because that's okay. That's the acceptable sin of modern Christianity, in my opinion, is obesity. And we get this little by little. We're willing to grow along spiritual lines. Some people get it right away, but I think the key here is God never gives up on anybody. He didn't give up on you, and you didn't give up on God, and it happens in stages. And this is more the norm with people that I've worked with, myself included, than the other way of having an instant conversion, everything's wonderful, and we head to Disneyland, you know? That's just not the reality for most people.
Mm-hmm. More of like Valley Fair for you. It's not Disneyland.
Valley Fair, yeah.
Yeah. So, Jennifer, are you admiring this Christian friend who's kind of by your side? Are you looking at her life thinking, I want to be more like her, or I want her stability, or what was keeping her attractive to you? Was it her faithfulness as a friend? Was it the life she was living? Because for you to just come up and say, hey, I want to go to church with you, now you don't hear that very often, do you, George?
No.
You know, it was one of the things was just I knew she loved me, and she also loved me for me, because she saw everything about me, which was terribly scary, as much as I was trying to hide. So there were plenty of things that I didn't tell her. But Brendan Manning has a great quote, and he says that God loves us just as we are and not as we should be, because no one is as they should be. And so I got that sense from her that God could love me too, just as I was and not as I should be. But again, I was hiding because I wanted to be like them. And I had that gnawing sense of I'm just not good enough, and that I needed to perform, and then I needed to keep up this fake facade in order to be loved. And so the way to get loved by God was to perform better. And then, you know, it just all fell apart. I was baptized in May of 1995, and I finally let go that summer because I just couldn't keep it all together. And I called my dad, who I never lived with. My father was in Wisconsin. He had remarried, and he had kept in touch, but I never lived with him. So I didn't really know him as a dad. But he came out and moved me out of my apartment, and I got on a plane in August of 1995 for Wisconsin. And it was just so funny because there were two things that I always told my dad. One, I would never live in Wisconsin, and two, I'd never get into recovery. You know, then I ended up doing both.
Which one was harder?
That's a great question.
It's a joke. I'm sorry. No, I just imagine you sitting there with a cheese head the first week here in Wisconsin going, what did I do, you know?
I left California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it helped.
It did help because just I love that we're talking about step one because it was just finally for me admitting that I was absolutely powerless. I couldn't do it. And also admitting that my life was unmanageable. I didn't have those words because I wasn't in recovery yet, but getting on a plane with a guy that I don't know, but I share his last name, and coming to the Midwest, and, you know, one of the things he and his wife required for me to live with them was to get into recovery. I didn't even know what that meant. But it was finally saying, yeah, this is unmanageable. I don't have this, and I need something bigger than me to help me.
So this is kind of your rock bottom moment, would you say?
It was absolutely my rock bottom moment.
And were you just struggling with an eating disorder at that point, or were you still using drugs?
Just struggling with the eating disorder.
Okay, but
at that time.
That was a loud barking dog at the time, wasn't it?
It was, and it was. It could have been life-threatening. And
how much? What did you weigh at your lowest?
Probably 90, 95 pounds.
Okay.
So how did you get into recovery for that?
You know, when my dad came out, he pulled out a list from his back pocket and he said, you know, these are the rules you need to follow and you need to get along with my wife and you need to get in recovery. And I was just terrified. I didn't even know what that meant. But on one of the first days, he drove me to a counselor who worked the steps and sat outside in his beater car while I went to counseling. And I started, you know, it's nothing real glamorous. I started going to three meetings a week and an outpatient therapy, and the process started there.
What did you get out of going to the meetings? Did it help you that you weren't the only one struggling with this?
It absolutely did, and I learned that I wasn't so, you know, I had sort of this complex that, like, I'm the only one, and my suffering is the worst, and this big boulder on my shoulder wasn't even a chip. It's just that you can't understand what it's like to be me. And I heard that I wasn't alone, and I heard that there were other people who survived too, and I heard stories that were worse and some stories that were not as worse, and I learned that recovery and trauma and surviving isn't a competition and who had it the worst.
I love that. I think a lot of us, when we come in and we get some church experience, we feel that we're around people that are perfect and doing the deal a lot better than we are. And one of the things I'm really encouraged about your story and appreciate you sharing it, for me it came in stages. And I started going to a church, and it was probably 7 or 8 years before I finally had continuous sobriety. And every week I'd look around and go, I'm not doing this good enough. So when I hear your story, I think we cannot be sensitive as we could be to people out there who are struggling. And what your story, you know, tells me is just keep coming. Just keep showing up. You know, bring who you are every week. And, you know, if you keep doing it, you'll get it. And so that's very encouraging for me.
Jennifer, I would have to agree with George. I mean, this is interesting. We're going to take a break here in a few seconds. But I just want to say, when you are now engaged in recovery, back living in Wisconsin with your biological father who you had no relationship with, but he is the driving point to help you get on track. I find this to be a very interesting story.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I think there's more to come. When we come back from break, I think after the eating disorder, something else happened pretty significant that kept you derailed, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're gonna hear about that.
That's a hook.
That was George.
I'm coming back.
I'm a master of the hook.
I was going to turn it off, but I'm coming
back.
No,
you got to come back. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back with Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. I hope you're enjoying the show. Thanks for being with us tonight on Real Recovery. If you just joined us, we're talking to Jennifer Loop, and she is the training coach and small group leader for Celebrate Recovery at Elmbrook Church. Her passion is to teach and preach the word to encourage others with the hope and healing found in Jesus Christ. She's married to her husband, Gary, for 15 years, and her biggest accomplishments include admitting she doesn't have all the answers, along with surviving, forgiving, and recovering. And her story is riveting, George.
It is. And genuine, the openness and vulnerability of the failures is fabulous.
Yeah. So, Jennifer, now you're back in recovery, and we're struggling with an eating disorder. And then what happened? Here's the cliffhanger.
God brought me some tremendous amount of healing and hope. And my husband, Gary, who just saved me in so many ways, too, and helped me so much. And then what happened is... like it was said earlier on the program, it's not a behavior problem, it's a heart problem. I had a heart problem, you know. I thought I had it all together. I thought that I didn't need recovery anymore and that, you know, I sort of outgrew it and had it all going. And, you know, it was because that little girl in me so badly wants to just feel normal and be like everyone else. And it's also hard for her to trust God. And so I just went my own way again. And in 2004, we were working too much, and I picked up over-the-counter diet pills again and started abusing those, which are very much like speed for me and just like the illegal drugs that I had done. And in 2004, I relapsed and nearly died. I overdosed.
What were you overdosing on, cocaine?
No, over-the-counter diet pills.
Oh, wow.
So I went back to... the same thing I did as a nine-year-old kid. Let me get the outside body image right because that'll fix the ocean of shame on the inside. And also, diet pills, because I'm a drug addict, they react for me like speed. So they're uppers, and then they make me feel powerful and in control. And I took one too many and nearly died in 2004. And it was just another rock bottom for me and a real humbling thing to realize that here I am thinking I have all this recovery down and now I've relapsed.
When you overdose on diet pills, what are the symptoms? Did you flatline for a little bit or did you pass out? Or I guess I don't know.
My husband and I were coming back from vacation. I took another one. I swallowed. I'd been taking them all through vacation and for, you know, a couple of years. And I lost the ability to breathe. I went into seizures. I try not to bite my tongue, and all the while he's on the phone with 911 trying to get me to a hospital. And one of the things that really turned it around for me at that moment was when my husband walked into the emergency room after they finally let him in, and he looked at me, and I thought he was going to ask for a divorce because that's what you do in my family, and that's probably what I would have done. Who knows? And he looked at me, and he grabbed my hand, and I couldn't even look him in the eyes because I was filled with so much shame. And he said, I want you to know that there's sin in my life, too, and I forgive you. And I had just never felt the grace of God, I think, mediated through another human being before like that in my life. And we started over.
Wow, that hit me, George.
Yeah, that is a very neat moment and true, isn't it? We all do have sin in our life. If we could back up, I wanted to ask you, what had you stopped doing in your recovery, or what were you doing for your recovery when you relapsed? Did you kind of coast for a while because you had things going and you're married and you're kind of normal now?
Yeah, exactly. I thought I had it locked, and I stopped going to meetings. I stopped doing service work. I stopped reading, for me, the things that I need to do, my recovery material, because it keeps me honest about admitting that I have a problem. I just thought that those were part of the past, and I didn't need that anymore.
One of the blessings and one of the curses about being in recovery is you have to do it every day, which is a curse, but it's also a blessing because pride comes before the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of us in recovery, we don't blow up small, we blow up big time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, Jennifer, your husband's extended this beautiful measure of grace to you. You get up out of the hospital bed, you walk out. What happens next?
I start counseling again.
Okay.
And getting honest. And you know, a verse that's really helpful for me, a couple of them, Psalm 147:3 was the first verse I ever memorized when I became a believer as a teenager, which is, He heals the brokenhearted and He binds up their wounds. Mm. And at the core of my problem and my addiction and my sin and my idolatry and all of that is that my heart was broken. And another one is Zechariah 4:6, which is, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord Almighty. And, you know, I was doing it a lot on my own power. So I start counseling, and I do step one. I admit that I'm powerless over drugs, over people, places, and things, and that when I would try and run my life my way, that my life is unmanageable. And a cool thing that happened out of that, though, is after I started counseling and getting honest and looking at some of the ways in which the trauma from the sexual abuse affected me, because I never wanted to look at that, that helped. I started going back to school, and I took one class at a time and went to seminary, and that was a really healing thing for me, too. And I graduated with my master's degree by taking a class at a time for 7 years.
Wow, that's wonderful.
That is neat.
That's outstanding. It's talking about being proactive, little by little.
Yeah, little by little.
So in 7 years, you get a master's degree in theology, right?
Yeah, and in Christian studies through
okay.
Trinity.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's so easy to kind of collapse all of that into thinking, oh, you know, each day, though, was a day of needing to do the things that I need to do, not that I did them every day, but I just... It's not despising the day of small things, you know, having to do the basics and put one foot in front of the other. And my dad always says one of the core things about recovery is just showing up and looking alert.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to show up and look alert.
That's one of the themes on this radio show.
Yeah.
Show up and look alert.
But my master's thesis project was bringing Celebrate Recovery to our local church. It's a program that John Baker from Saddleback Church came with. But for me, my master's project was putting that together with the help of a ton of other people. It certainly wasn't just me, but at our local church.
So, Jennifer, I'm curious, because when George asked you about what was going on around the time of your relapse, I'm also curious as to who was present in your life, what accountability did you have that you either ignored or pushed away, that allowed you to go off the rails?
You know, I didn't have any accountability. I didn't, because I'd gotten some healing with my food and body image issues. I had a sponsor from a food sponsor, but I thought, you know, I don't really need that. But I didn't have any accountability by way of a sponsor.
George, you're going to give her your lecture?
No, I'm listening.
Okay. I thought George was going to lecture you there.
My dad, who'd been really active, you know, probably suggested to me meetings, which I probably promptly ignored.
Okay.
Well, we can always ignore advice.
Well, always, but, yeah.
That's part of the deal. Isn't it amazing how when we make progress, the things that help us to get there, we stop doing?
What's with that, Einstein?
You don't need to do it anymore. It's like people that we work with that are depressed, and I hope I never get depressed. I think I bring that out in people around me, but they take the antidepressants, and then after a while, they go, hey, I don't need to take these things anymore. I'm going to stop because they're working. And one thing you said, if I could just throw this out to you, because I heard a guy say this about 2 years ago, a friend of ours named John L., he said, you know, I never wanted to be normal because normal's too boring. And that was the first time I had heard that. And I had always said, Jennifer, that I wanted to be normal like everybody else. But you know what the truth is? I got a little extra game than everybody else, and I wanted to be me. And I don't need to go to meetings, and I don't need to go to church, and I don't need to pray every day because I'm George F., and I got this thing nailed down. And if I don't own that in step one for me, that's one of my deals, I will use again.
Yeah, that's true. I think I wanted to, on the one hand, feel normal and be like everyone else and be able to do what I perceived other people did, which was not having to work a recovery program.
Yes.
But, yeah, there's that part of me that also arrogantly thought, and probably I still think, well, I'm special. My case is different. What works for other people, that's them. I don't have to do that. It's just the arrogance. That's the importance of the we for me in step one. It's that, you know, we do this work together. And I wanted to just be able to recover my way all alone with God and the Bible in a room all by myself and just do it my way.
I love that. I love that. That way we don't have to include other people. This is beautiful.
Right. And you absolutely need other people.
Well, I know
have a healthy
you can
recovery.
Relate to this because you're looking across the studio thinking you should have your own show. I know you can relate to this on a certain level.
I can have
level.
My own show starting next week if I want.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
You know.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, if it's a satanic influence, the fiery darts out of Ephesians that come into our heads, but why do we stop doing what works?
Well, George, let's start with what happens when you're 9 years old and you have an influence that's going on that's really damaging to a psyche. And I think Satan will want to get a foothold as early and as young as he can in someone's life because he's got a place, a port of entry to return to. He's got a place he can go. And he can annoy and oppress and bring pain and disappointment. And it certainly happened for Jennifer at a very young age. Because I'm liking, just to connect the dots here a little bit, Jennifer, you have this encounter at an evangelistic event in high school, but then you have years and years and years of use that goes on until you come to how much time has passed when you start to actually really sink your teeth into God's word and his plan for your life?
5 years at least.
Okay. So, George, that seems to be, you know, also, I've heard that story many times as well, too. You know, you have this moment of clarity and conversion, but the Holy Spirit isn't really, you know, it's not, you're not feeding on God's word every day and being transformed.
Sure. We've got to take some action. And the thought and the heart might be in the right place, but what's the plan?
Right.
And it's so hard as a new Christian to relate to other people. I remember for me, Bill, that when I went to Bethel College, which was real early in my Christianity, they're talking about Ephesians and Galatians. It was like somebody speaking Chinese to me. I was clueless.
Mm-hmm.
And so why do you want to jump in? It's too big. And so I'm just going to do it the way I can on willpower.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we have one more segment coming up with Jennifer. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us. Okay, we are back. Thanks for being with us tonight on Real Recovery. We're talking to Jennifer Loop tonight, and she's this story is, George, it's all over. It starts with abuse and addiction, and then it goes to an eating disorder, then back to chemicals. And now she is really doing amazing things, heading up a Celebrate Recovery at her church.
It's a lot of victory.
Oh, tons of victory.
And there's a tenacity to hang in there. When she could have just said, hey, I can't do this. And we do get to that, I can't do it, but she let Jesus do it. And look how it worked out.
A loving, forgiving God and a loving and graceful, forgiving husband.
Right.
She's got a lot of support.
And Dad, too. I like Dad in this story.
Dad's a big player in the story.
Yeah. A lot of wisdom there.
So, Jennifer, give us a little idea of what your Celebrate Recovery is like in your church and how you are connecting with people and what kind of victories you're having there.
At Celebrate Recovery, for me on Monday nights, you know, we meet 52 weeks out of the year. And at least for me, it's not somewhere I think, oh, I have to go. It's, you know, I get to go or I want to go. And it's a safe place for me to be myself. You know, I don't have to edit myself. And it's, you can't just... normal life or work, go talk right away about your addiction or this and that. And so it's just a safe place. And I'm reminded how much I need it too. It's not like I think I'm doing it for them or these other people or these addicts. It's me. And I'm reminded every week, they say it in the program, I can't, and he can, so I think I'll let him.
I love that, Bill, because we come into our new behavior out of an avoidance of pain, but we stay out of a pursuit of pleasure. And the old saying is, you have to go to support meetings until you want to. And it sounds to me, Jennifer, like you go, great, it's Monday. I've got my Celebrate Recovery tonight. This is great.
I do, yeah. And we laugh, you know, so much of this life is painful. And when you're around other people who share common stories, you can actually laugh at some of the stuff that helps me take myself less seriously. You know, my dad will always say that, kid, you know, lighten up. It doesn't need to be so serious. There's joy. And so I like that celebrating part. And one of the things we just did a couple weeks ago at Celebrate Recovery, we do this every quarter or so, but we do open mic night, which is not joke-telling night, but it's a night where everybody can just kind of get up for 5 minutes and talk about how Jesus Christ transformed their life. And it's amazing.
That's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is great to get this into the churches. One of the things about the Saddleback Church that is spread across the country is there's a lot of hurting people every week. I'm one of them in church, and we hear the sermons and go, gosh, I should be doing that. And what Celebrate Recovery does is teach you how to do it with other people in community under the cross and the mercy of Jesus. And that's just fabulous for me because it's walking out our faith.
Jennifer,
and we worship a person, we worship Jesus, and then he helps us use the program and the steps.
Jennifer, I have a question for you, and I want you to respond to something you said earlier when you said, one of the nice things about Celebrate Recovery is I can go and be myself. So comment on how it feels to go into a church where you feel like maybe you can't be yourself, and what kind of environment are we in today with churches where we just can't go be who we are?
You know, I guess if I let it begin with me, when I go to other places, part of my problem is my own inferiority complex. However, that being said, sometimes I feel like I have to edit myself because I'll be offensive to people, or that I'm just too much, or that it's inappropriate. And that pretending got me and gets me into trouble. And so I just think sometimes in the church, we know what we should be doing, but we don't do it, but then we don't want to get honest with other people.
See, that part I don't always understand, although I do get it. I mean, it's hard to just lay it all out there, whatever your past sin is or your current struggle is, and people want to show up with their best behavior. George, you often say, you know, you perform it on your best behavior when you go to church.
I'm on best behavior mode at church.
All the time. And so people aren't really getting to know who you are. They're getting to know the version that you present to church.
Well, I don't stay that long either. If I hung around for a while, they'd get to know me, and then I probably couldn't go back. I think that's not, you know, I find myself saying, how you doing? Oh, I'm really blessed. I never say that.
Do you say that?
No, but
okay.
It's kind of an example,
yeah.
You know. And I think there's, it's tough, and I guess I go to church to worship, but it would be great to find a church, Jennifer, where I could go to Celebrate Recovery afterwards and know some people and worship with them, you know, on Sunday morning and then see them Monday night. I don't have that. I would love that. I think it's great what you're doing.
Thanks. Yeah.
I mean, Bill, that's, you know, it's the community. And we were talking before the show that I'm trying to find a church. I go, but I'm not ecstatic about it. And I have a lot of Christian friends who aren't either. They go because we're supposed to go. And I want to be obedient, but it's not the, boy, some of the meetings that I've been to, man, I look forward to going to those, and we laugh. Church, we're kind of on a good behavior mode.
Mm-hmm.
I'll shut up now while I still have a radio show.
No, so. But I mean, at these meetings, you get to talk about yourself, you know, when you go to church to worship Jesus.
Well, it's not talking about yourself. It's talking about what God has done in your life.
Okay. And that'd be a Christian recovery group.
I think a lot of people that I know that are Christians should go to groups and talk about their stuff, because whatever they decided to change when they became a Christian, they haven't done a lot of work on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about some of my friends. They're stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you and I got to watch it, because we're behind mics, and there's a real tendency when you get a leadership position to think you're okay and stop doing your own work. Just my opinion.
No, I agree, George. Jennifer, tell us a little bit about some of the relationships you have today. It sounds like you and your dad have restored quite nicely.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because I didn't know him. So I have that dad that I always wanted. And, you know, I sometimes turn into a little kid when I'm around him. When he comes to celebrate recovery, you know, I put my head on his shoulder and I want to climb into his lap like I'm 10 years old and I have to catch myself. There's that my husband who supports me so much and knows all my fears and anxieties and the good and the bad and, you know, and sticks around. And I think the other thing that God gave me and the program gave me are genuine friends. And I didn't have friends before. I didn't know how to be a friend, and I didn't have them because I was so afraid. I was always running. And so I've got roots. And, you know, they say if you want to keep it, you got to give it away. So I get, and then I try and give back.
Jennifer, whatever became of your friend that brought you to the outreach event? Are you still in touch with her?
We're still great friends. I emailed her that I was going to do this and asked her to pray. And, you know, we're still really, really close.
Nice. Is she listening tonight? What's her name?
Her name is Jackie.
Jackie, thanks for reaching out to Jennifer and bringing her to that meeting. You know, sometimes, George, when you have parents that are talking to their kids about the friends they're hanging with, you might have looked at her parents might have looked at Jennifer and said, I don't know if I want you hanging out with her.
Mm-hmm. Did parents say that about you in high school?
No. They said that about you, George.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, I know they did. Yeah. You want to stay away from that Fraser boy.
And I talked back to him, too.
I know you did.
I still would, yeah.
But I think it's a good reminder that there are kids in the gap, and they need to be, we need to reach out to them. Kids need to be encouraged by their parents to reach out to the kids who seem to be struggling and broken and sad and not doing this kind of stuff they're doing.
Well, Bill, you said something a few weeks ago out of Luke 11, I think it was, that Jesus was a friend mm-hmm. to the sinners.
Yep.
We got to remember to do that.
Yeah, absolutely, because this story, to me, got real interesting when she's invited by a Christian girl when she's in the middle of a cocaine addiction living with someone twice her age to go to an evangelistic outreach event where she has a confrontation with the gospel and gets saved.
No, we have great stories of redemption because we have a great God, but somebody was the hands and feet of Jesus to make the invitation.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really exciting part of your story, Jennifer.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I just...
in unlikely ways.
Pardon?
God works in unlikely ways, you know, wasn't anything I would ever dreamed up.
Yeah, it's kind of non-obvious. I mean, sometimes you look back over your life and go, oh, that was so significant. And yet at the time it was like, I'll go, no big deal.
Yes.
But you don't realize how important it was and how significant it was because God I said this last week, he works in non-obvious ways sometimes.
Well, the other thing is, Billy, to tie in with that, we don't know. We really don't. We don't know anything, really. We really don't. I mean, at the time, I'm sure she didn't go, this will transform my life, and I'm going to keep using for a while, but I'll come back, and I'll be leading a Celebrate Recovery group, so I'm going to go.
Totally. Jennifer, give us a couple of parting words of wisdom for some of our listeners who might just be in a funk tonight.
One of the things that helped me was just, I would say to myself, you know, just make a different mistake. Stop making the same mistake. Make a different mistake. But one of the first scriptures that I really kind of sunk into me when I first became a believer was John 9:3. And the disciples asked Jesus why a man's born blind. And Jesus, they say, whose fault is it, basically? Who sinned? And Jesus said, well, it wasn't this man or his parents that sinned, but so that the works of God might be made visible. And I remember reading that thinking, you know, I don't know why the abuse happened. I don't know why all this stuff happened. But I know that God can take that mess and make something beautiful out of it. And there can be a new purpose and a new creation out of it.
Wow.
That's really fantastic. Jennifer, you've been such an interesting guest, and we have loved having you on the show. And if you want to listen to this program again or pass it on to a friend, you can certainly go to MyFaithRadio.com and go to Real Recovery show page, and you can pass it along. It'll be podcast probably in the next couple hours, maybe. But Jennifer, thanks for being our guest. You've just been a ton of fun to have on the air, and God bless you and your continued recovery. George, another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Thanks for a great night, and of course, you know I can't do this show without you.
So, it was great. What
a great
job.
Good night, everyone.
Great job.